A month after a series of Arctic storms tore through communities along Alaska's west coast, the state is releasing assistance for individuals and families affected by the wreckage. The aid will take two forms, individual and family grants and temporary housing assistance. Jeremy Zedek, Public Information Officer for Alaska's Division of Homeland Security and Emergency Management, says the program will launch no later than tomorrow and continue through January 17th. The grants will help recover costs from storm damage incurred during early November. Eligible claims include injury to homes, personal property, and transportation. In addition, medical, dental, and funeral expenses directly resulting from the severe weather qualify. Households can receive up to $16,200 in aid. Within combined households, persons can apply for individual grants for personal damages.
For example, if there was a family living in a house with a brother, say, that household would be eligible for $16,200. However, if the brother had damage to his transportation and not his housing or his personal possessions, he could be a separate applicant.
Zedek says these funds serve as a last resort after insurance or other forms of relief have been sought. In addition to grants, temporary housing assistance will be available for folks whose homes were made uninhabitable by the storms. This effort will provide rental assistance and help with locating housing. People can apply for aid in three ways: online, by telephone, or for the residents of Kotlik and Stebbins, in person at a disaster assistance center. These centers will be open December 8th through December 12th. At these stations, workers will be taking applications and verifying damages. For those outside Kotlik and Stebbins, the website and hotline will be the only methods of application. Zedek says as the state identifies other communities with home damage, inspectors will be sent to those locations to assess claims. Zedek says anything damaged by the storm may be eligible for relief. To apply, create a complete list of damages, taking photos and videos when possible. Have ownership and insurance documents on hand, as well as personal identification. If ownership papers are unavailable, Zedek says don't worry, the organization has procedures for determining possession. The takeaway message, Zedek says, is to apply. If you incurred storm damage but are uncertain of your eligibility, still apply. Once the deadline passes, aid will not be readily available.
If people had damages, even if they're not sure that their damages are eligible and there's a little bit of confusion, just to apply. Our application takers will walk them through the process, and if there is damages there that we feel are eligible, we'll go out and do the verification. If people don't apply and the deadline passes, there's not a lot of assistance that we can provide.
The web address and phone number for the application hotline should be posted by the end of the day today at www.ready.alaska.gov. KNOM will air these contacts as they are released. In the past few months, many individuals and organizations have sent donations of food, money, and other supplies to Savunga and Gamble on St. Lawrence Island. But facing the lowest walrus harvest on record, the contributions are still dwarfed by the needs growing from this year's economic disaster. Vi Waiigi is the Environmental Health and Justice Program Director at Alaska Community Action on Toxins and is a tribal member of the Native Village of Savunga. She's been in touch with the leadership in Gamble and Savunga and says the effects of the disaster are only getting worse.
Our children and elders are hungry. Our freezers are empty. Our families that where their utilities are being shut off. People are not able to make their ends meet because of there's no walrus ivory.
ACAT has helped coordinate many of the generous contributions that have been made to St. Lawrence Island, but there's no coordinated state program for assistance. Instead, a patchwork of organizations and agencies has arisen. Anne Wagawi says they're arranging the logistics for aid.
There have been multi-agency efforts finally started a couple weeks ago to look into ways to help some money. There's some canned salmon that will be coming, some bison, and other ways that people are coming together.
Food donations have poured in, and Wagawi says the generosity is much appreciated, but the situation is more complicated than just a food shortage. To begin with, even the 20 tons of canned salmon being sent it by a convex of five different regional fish processors is the equivalent poundage of just 10 to 15 walruses. In an average year, St. Lawrence Islanders harvest 995 of these giant marine mammals. And even if the walrus harvest were matched pound for pound, it wouldn't bring any ivory with it. For traders and carvers on the island, along with their families, ivory is one of the few ways to get cash. The low walrus harvest is an economic disaster not just because people don't have food, but also because families in Savunga and Gamble, both of which were already classified as low income under federal poverty guidelines, are having to decide where to put meager cash reserves.
Not only the walrus are main food throughout the winter, but the ivory, you know, our men carve it so that they can get cash that is used in our basic day-to-day needs like stove oil. And, you know, it's a cash-strapped community. We have no jobs. So the few jobs that are there is not enough for our people to make a living and support their families.
ACAT aimed to raise $35,000 by December 1st. They got less than a third of that, about $10,000. The organization asked the leadership in Gamble and Savunga where the money would be best spent. Wagawi says they are aiming to send up goods in bulk, bought from the Food Bank of Alaska before the holidays.
So right now, we are looking into purchasing some staples like flour and rice, powdered milk, and other food items that our leadership recommended.
There's no existing governmental mechanism for addressing the disaster on St. Lawrence Island. And while it's impossible to attribute this year's abysmal walrus harvest directly to climate change, it can be said that weather events are disrupting coastal communities in Alaska with unprecedented regularity. Wagawi says fluctuations with subsistence patterns like diminishing coastlines are not aberrations, but warnings of what is to come.
Communities like Shishmaref and Kivalina who are falling into the Bering Sea due to erosion from storm surges, and, you know, these are a result of climate change and global warming, and nobody is helping our people up here. This is going to start happening in other places.
There are guidelines in place for natural disasters, as was seen in the Department of Homeland Security's response to region-wide storms last month. But with no protocols in place for coordinated government support amid economic disasters and long-term environmental threats, many communities are in the precarious position of not knowing when or if they'll get any help at all. Yesterday was the final day of the Western Arctic Caribou Herd Working Group meeting in Anchorage. As Lorelei Kanin reports, the entire morning's conversation revolved around the proposed Ambler Road project.
The Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority is planning to build the road to Nova Copper's mining claims in the Ambler Mining District. The road is part of Governor Sean Parnell's Road to Resources program, and the permitting process is slated to begin early next year, in a few months. The Caribou Herd Working Group got an update from ADA on where they are in the process of developing the private industrial road. ADA's Ambler Access Program Manager, Mary Ellen Tuttle, said they plan on beginning the environmental review process soon. As of now, ADA has put together a proposal.
Once we submit this proposal to the federal agencies, there will be an entirely new team of environmental people looking at the alternative we propose and looking at the potential environmental and social impacts and offering suggestions on changes and mitigation measures.
A number of working group members and members of the public voiced their opposition to the Ambler Road project directly to Tuttle and the road developers, along with John Moeller, the governor's rural affairs advisor. Naturally, this being the Western Arctic Herd meeting, many concerns were in regards to the caribou herd's migration. The proposed road runs directly perpendicular to the path caribou take to their wintering grounds. Virginia Comack from Ambler addressed the working group and federal representatives who support and advise the working group in decision-making and various federal processes. Comack said her tribe expects to sit down with every federal agency regarding any sort of planning on their ancestral land and water rights areas.
And the very area where the land proposal for the mining and the exploration done are all our traditional lands, waters, of our Kuvalumi people, the biggest, largest nation in the whole Northwest Alaska. And yet, for your information, we do not fit in your public scoping meetings. Therefore, we developed our government-to-government policy. So we expect even the mining company and ADA to come to us, to sit with us one-on-one and get the information of all our mapping of our traditional grounds and uses.
Pollock Simon Sr. from Allakaket is a member of the working group. He says his community, along with those around him, will be greatly impacted by the proposed 225-mile road to Ambler from the Dalton Highway.
There's lots to talk about, lots to be worried about. If the road is ever open, people will come up, not just to look around, but maybe hunt and fish. The proposed road could forever change the way of life. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
The Western Arctic Caribou Herd Working Group formed a committee that will look further at the Ambler Road project. Outgoing board chair Roy Ashenfelter from Nome suggested that the newly formed committee meet with the Army Corps of Engineers, the BLM, and the National Park Service. He advised the public and the working group members to be patient with the upcoming meetings regarding the road and the mine.
That be patient, be engaged, and get people in there that would help get your message out about, in our case, concerns for the migratory route to the caribou that would definitely be impacted by this road.
The road to Ambler and Nova Copper's mine go hand in hand, both saying neither project will be developed without the other. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Lorelei Kinneen.
Hundreds of dead seabirds that washed up on St. Lawrence Island late November were killed by avian cholera. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game put out a press release late Wednesday evening specifying that the relatively common bacteria caused the large die-off of seabirds. Wildlife biologist Kathy Harms with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game said that the infection is extremely common and the risk of transmission to humans are almost non-existent. What is surprising, said Harms, is that this is the first recorded case of avian cholera in Alaska, although it has been reported in northern territories of Canada before. Humans are at a minimal risk of getting sick, however, the Department of Fish and Game still urges caution. Residents of the region who find dead seabirds are advised to put them in vented fuel drums. That way the carcasses can decay but are not likely to transmit infections to scavengers that might feed on them. The department also advises against eating any sick-looking seabirds and thoroughly washing hands after handling any carcasses. In a look at the price of gold in New York at this hour, gold is up $5.60 an ounce to $1,231.70 an ounce. Silver is up 16 cents an ounce to $19.69 an ounce. Zinc is at 85 cents a pound. It is unofficially 33 degrees outside the KNOM studios, 15 and a half minutes after 9 o'clock.